Hi, Martin. Welcome to EHX-FM.
Hi, Adam. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Martin is not a problem, but your last name, is it Kuba or Koba?
It's Koba.
Koba. Yeah. Perfect.
Koba. Yeah.
Nice. What was your first computer?
My first computer was actually a clone of ZX Spectrum. It was called Didactic, and it was basically a Czechoslovakia clone of the computer.
Was it a one-to-one clone, or was it like reverse-engineered CPU, you know? This is like...
I have no idea, to be honest, but I guess that it would be like reverse-engineered somehow.
Okay. And the BASIC was in English, right? Or was it also... Okay. And what you did with the computer?
Well, I played games.
Yeah. What were your favorites?
I do remember a few of them, but I don't know. One of them was Ball Breaker. The other one was, Laser Squad. That was actually a strategy game.
Wow.
Really nice.
On ZX Spectrum, I don't know that. So the, I think what you, Ball Breaker, I think
Ball
it
Breaker.
Was.
There was,
Arkanoid. Is this the same?
It was like Arkanoid, but but the graphics were like isometric somehow. 3D
cool.
Almost. It was really good.
Okay. And when you started to program or script or whatever we call it, so do something different to gaming.
So actually at that time in Czechoslovakia, we had a magazine that was called ABC. And they, from time to time, there were like programs that you could just, in BASIC, obviously, and you can just write the whole code base, basically the whole program, and try it. So that was my first programming experience. I copied these BASIC lines and it somehow worked usually.
Oh, it worked, because I also tried to achieve the same, but it never worked. I always introduced some mistakes and I was never successful, you know, because they were actually very long listings.
Yeah.
So, and you were successful. That's interesting.
Yeah. I believe that not always, but 50% maybe.
Okay. And were these like games or utilities?
Usually simple games, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm.
And was the Spectrum and ABC community big in Czech Republic? Or?
Yeah, actually, yes, because at that time it was the cheapest computer you could get. So there were quite a lot of use. The thing is that most of the games and programs we use were basically pirate copies, because there was no official way how to buy that software.
Mm-hmm. So okay, and so this was your first, you know, so you were able to install games by writing code. This is more or less what you did. Yeah. And when you started to program, what was your first application or your first line, you know, of your code? Or why you did it? More interesting, because if you're happy with games, you know, why not keep gaming?
Yeah, so when I can say what was the first line of my code, but I do remember that with my best friend, we basically tried to write a computer game. Like, there was a few years later, there wasn't Spectrum anymore. And that was basically the first program I wrote, I think. So we tried to create games, and we had like several ideas, and we tried one and the other and so on. So that was it. Again, games.
Okay. And this was not ZX Spectrum. What was it? Commodore?
But I believe that it was already PC.
Like, okay.
I didn't own one. But my friend did, so we basically did
shared.
Some.
Mm-hmm. So you shared the PC to write a game, right?
Yes, exactly.
In which programming language?
It was Pascal, I think. Yeah.
Okay, and what did it work somehow?
Yeah, it actually worked. But to be honest, back then, my friend was more like the lead programmer. The lead programmer and I was just
the tech
helping.
Lead.
Yeah, tech lead. I was just helping because, you know, he had the computer at home. I didn't,
yeah.
So it was
Oh, yeah, this was a differentiation back then. If you had your computer at home, you were the tech lead, you know, and all the others were just programmers.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, super cool. So you had to learn Pascal. So was it easy for you to learn Pascal after basic experience or hard or?
To be honest, I don't remember.
This was so long ago. Okay.
Long time ago.
So then, okay, so what was after Tour Pascal? Let's say the game was maybe interesting. You remember the game. What was it?
Yeah, we had a few games actually, but the last one was kind of a strategy game with it was fantasy, you know, Lord of the Rings and style.
Were dwarves involved?
Yes, obviously.
Cool. And what was the name? Was it the English name?
I believe it was Fury.
Wow.
Yeah, Fury.
Fury.
Yeah.
Yeah, super cool. And someone played the game?
a few of our friends and, you know, brothers.
And but, they enjoyed that? Yeah. So what was the feedback? I'm just curious. So.
I don't remember exactly, but it was like a few of them probably enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
But I don't believe that the user experience was that good. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, but I mean, it's at least, you know, how old were you? So a teenager?
Teenagers.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a remarkable achievement, actually, to write a game which is used by someone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy. And what was what you did with Pascal? Was it like, that's all, and you switched to other languages, or?
Yeah, that's basically all Pascal.
So what was the next language then?
I believe that various web-related stuff. So I started to put with HTML and JavaScript and PHP and I actually remember ASP back then.
Active server pages,
yeah,
like JSPs. Mm-hmm.
They also basically use one of the scripting language was Visual. No, it was not Visual. Yeah, maybe a Visual Basic, something like that. So it was similar to
exactly. And you did it because you got a job, or?
No, it was at the university. So we had some practical parts for
Was it in Prague?
Yeah.
A beautiful university. I was actually invited once into Prague to Java User Group. And
I know, but I wasn't there.
But it was really nice. It's an old building and it was beautiful. So I have good memories. Mm-hmm. And what happened after university? You started, or maybe did you implement something interesting during your university days? Or
Not really, but I started to look into Java.
Why?
It was, I don't know. I believe that it was that back then most of the people were using PHP and ASP and stuff like that. And I somehow, I don't know. I don't even remember whether it was a teacher or some friend of mine. He told me, you know, Java, they also have like JSPs and stuff like that. I said, no, I have no idea what it is. And I started to look into it. And basically fell in love.
Very good. Which version was it?
That was Java 4.
So you were late to the game. So Java 4 was already sophisticated. So JDK 1.3 was, you know, a huge... and 5 became to be really good with annotations.
Yeah, actually, when I got my first job after the university, there was Java 5. And so there was my first, like... I was trying to push Java 5 because of annotations and stuff like that. And there were some colleagues of mine who were like saying that Java 4 is the best thing to do. We don't want any annotations. We want to use XML and things like
this
that.
This was a surprising thing. I hated XML from the beginning. So I tried to avoid that. So I use Xdoclet whatever possible.
Yeah. I do remember Xdoclet. And that was horrible because it was slow. It was,
But it was somehow you could use with Eclipse. Eclipse had a code completion for the Doclets, you know. So it behaved almost like annotations. And the interesting part is, if annotations came, so the name like stateless and whatever were inspired, or ejb.name, I remember, were inspired by the Doclets. And what I remember is this is why I always try to avoid Spring. Because there was sometimes more XML configuration than Java. This was the only reason. So people say, hey, I have to look at Spring. And I look at Spring and say, okay, but I really don't like XML. And what I never got, actually, since now, until now, you know, the idea that you have service and IMPL. two classes one-to-one always, and they are configured in XML. So they said, yeah, but you can replace it. But I had performed so many code reviews, and it was never replaced. So I said, okay, why we have to do that, right? And I remember Java 5 and Java EE 5, you just said at not inject at EJB, and the problem was solved. There was like convention of a configuration, right? So this was what I really appreciated. And this was actually the only thing. And then I was curious what happens with Spring, because I said, okay, if Spring will keep going, you know, with XML, I'm curious, you know, whether they will survive or what happens. And what I read back then, they said, okay, annotations are not meant to be used in production. And I say, why? I back then, you know, this was, I even remember the date, because I was at a workshops and someone told me this, yeah, annotations, not annotations, auto-configured or whatever it's called, auto-wired, I think.
Auto-wired
with a convention of a configuration you must not use in production. And I said, okay, but why? And this was the official statement from the docs. And since then, I just got too many Java E and MicroProfile projects. So I never did Spring, actually. But interesting that they also saw that with Java 5. And I always wondered why someone would love to... I like XML more than YAML, but if it makes sense, right? So yeah. I would say if you store something, structured data, or you the configuration, this is what I really like XML, but not replicating already existing information from Java code to XML. Never got it. Yeah, cool. So we are at least compatible on that front, you know, with XML. And you got a job right away after the university with Java 5. Yeah. Hey, yeah. Cool. What was it?
Well, actually, it was the transition from Java 4 to Java 5, and mm-hmm. we did some enterprise telco projects.
So. Cool. Was it fun?
Yeah, I think so. It was fun, and I was also. Back then, I started to look into open source.
Uh-huh.
I really enjoyed it because, you know, at school, at university, we never, like, tried to read the source code of the libraries and stuff like that. And I started to do that and love open source since then, basically.
Mm-hmm. And the telco project, what was the WebSphere or WebLogic?
Back then... It was not even WebSphere, not WebLogic. It was something called, I do remember the name. It was OC4J. It was
OC4J is the Oracle containers for Java.
Yeah,
and this was from Oracle, and Oracle bought Orion back then.
Yeah,
so this was Oracle Application Server.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Orion Server was actually for that time. It was great. It was almost like Quarkus. I mean, not, you know, not this functionality, but comparing to other servers. It was very lightweight, very small, and implemented by Swedish developers.
Yeah. The problem back then was that we developed our application against OC4J, but the production deployment was not OC4J. It was something, I don't remember, some Oracle EIS, some application server. It was completely different runtime.
Okay.
So it was... really different.
Okay, so and you were a freelancer, or you work, or you joined the company?
I joined the company as an employee. Yeah.
And what was the next project?
Well, next project or next job?
No, whatever interesting. I don't care about jobs or projects. Just the trajectory, you know.
So back then, I actually also explored the other possibilities of. With the application service, and I somehow noticed that there is this JBoss thing. So I started to push JBoss to other projects in my first job. And yeah, back then it was also the first time I saw Seam, JBoss Seam framework.
Mm-hmm.
Again, open source. Mm-hmm. And we also already use Hibernate, so it was kind of natural fit. So I started to look into this, and the next application was actually running on JBoss. We use Seam and Hibernate and some other libraries from JBoss.
And Seam was huge, because Seam was like the glue between backend and JSF frontend, and it was like the prototype for producers annotations, right? For the data bindings, or it was a very, very popular framework, I would say.
Yep.
And I think it still has some legs, because what can happen, you know, with the entire LLMs or whatever, that we maybe need some, you know, lightweight UIs, you know, MCP UI or whatever, and technology like that could help, actually, who knows, you know, if you do everything with Java. So I'm experimenting a lot in there, and even Swing could come back, because LLMs know it really well, and it can look great, and the you know, all the layout managers are very capable. So so interesting times. Okay, so you did some Sims projects. Was it also Telco, the same company?
Yeah, the same company.
Okay, cool. And was it successful? I mean, clients were happy and.
Yes, more or less.
Yeah, more or less is always the case. I mean, there's never perfect happiness, but And okay, and what was the next interesting thing? So, what interests me? Why Jeb was not Glassfish back then?
I don't remember.
Okay. Because I use JBoss from the beginning all the time, and I think JBoss 5 was a little bit problematic. It was not a good release. And I swapped and switched to Glassfish, and Glassfish was a big hit because Glassfish was the reference implementation, was capable, and my clients could buy support from Sun at the same time, which was cool. And the problem with JBoss back then was, or Whitefly and JBoss, that if they started with Whitefly, they couldn't get support for Whitefly. They had to migrate to JBoss back then. This was the story. And with Glassfish, you could keep using Glassfish and just pay support. You know, this was a problem back then with JBoss and Whitefly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The next project I basically had is my switch to Red Hat, because I was looking at the source of those libraries, mm-hmm. and I was curious about how it works. And mm-hmm. once I actually, as a funny story, I actually found a small security thing like problem in Seam, mm-hmm. and I sent an email to the maintainer of the project, mm-hmm. and they replied with, "Hey, do you want to join us?"
Hey, cool! And who was the maintainer?
Back then it was Marek. I don't even know what name. Yeah, Marek Novotny.
I also know the guy from Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So this. The guy was already in Brno in Czech Republic. Mm-hmm. He was maintaining the project. So, and they replied to me like, "Hey, we have an open slot for, it was not Seam, but it was CDI TCK." Mm-hmm. So I was like, "Okay, TCK testing, let's try that." So I joined Red Hat and I worked on TCK and then on the spec and reference implementation of CDI as well.
This is why I know your name, because I saw Marek's name from time to time, but M Koba, this was like your handle, and I found all over the place. And they say, "I have to invite you because I wanted to talk with you about CDI and back then TCK and stuff like that." And but CDI, TCK is huge, right? It's actually a huge task.
Yeah, it was a huge back then.
When was it, the year, roughly, you know?
2000, so I don't know, 10, 11, mm-hmm. something like that. Uh-huh. And the first task I had was actually migrating TCK from something that was called Test Harness, JBoss Test Harness, to Archelion, because mm-hmm. back then uh-huh. Archelion was a thing. And the other big task I had was to migrate TCK from subversion to GitHub, actually.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
There were lots of plugins and projects we tried to do that. You remember? Yeah. So because the problem was also the history, right? So how to migrate the history. Exactly. This was.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we used some tool to preserve the history and stuff like that. Yeah, and the next thing was obviously to improve the coverage, because that's always important when it comes to TCK to have some great coverage. So I worked on TCK like, I don't know, several years basically.
And what was your approach? Because this is a hard stuff. I mean, there is a document, you know, the spec. You have to read it somehow and map it to the code. So what was your approach to write TCK tests? I'm really curious.
Yeah, so actually in CDI and also in bin validation, those two specs were led by Red Hat back mm-hmm. then. So we basically had an XML file that mm-hmm. Listed all the possible assertions. So someone has to walk through the text and extract the assertions into this XML file. And then in the test, we were referencing these parts of the XML file to record the coverage and stuff like that. So it wasn't perfect, but it worked well.
And what was the, I mean, a search engine XML, how I can imagine mm-hmm. that? So it was like a high, DSL?
Yeah, imagine a paragraph of a bug of the specification.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone came up and say, okay, here is the text that says each bean has a set of bean types. But mm-hmm. have an assertion that if you define uh-huh. this bean, then it has these types and stuff.
So in XML was more like the spec of the test. So it was not the code, but what to do to cover the spec, right?
Yes, yes. Basically, and they also had the XML parts had some unique identifiers so that you can reference them in the test. For example, I don't know, chapter 4, section 2, assertion A or something like that, so that you can mm-hmm. reference them in the test.
And the spec was already written in normative way, right?
Like,
yep. Yeah. What's interesting is, per accident, this is a client asked me once, you know, we have LLMs and is, you know, the entire design or whatever, does code really matter still? And this question, I thought about this, and then I said, and then I got a completely different idea. And I say, look, because the specs were written in this way, like you said, CDI, very, you know, clear and normative way. CDI is great. JAX-RS, perfect. JPA as well. So the most complex specs are written in really, how to call it, precise way. Call it this way.
Mm-hmm.
If you tell LLM to generate code for the spec, they write perfect code. I never saw specific an hallucination so far, because never, for instance, what never happened to me that an LLM invented an annotation, because it is well defined, you know. But if you say, you know, LLM, you are only allowed to use CDI, it will use that. But I would say the LLM generates a CDI dependency injection for Quarkus, then it's over, because there are too many possibilities, you know?
Yeah.
This is the interesting part.
Yeah, so first of all, you still need the API, right? So the specification is the text
yeah.
and the API.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. if, yeah, basically, LLMs can understand it very well.
Exactly, extremely well. This is the huge added value for Java, and this is, actually today I'm going to Java 1 to talk about that. And I'm really amazed how well it works. And this is thanks to your work and all the others of this specification leads, spec leads, because the purpose was completely different, right? Back then, the idea was we have a precise spec and multiple vendors implementations. And if you have a precise spec, there are no variations, because otherwise it would be not precise. So so LLMs really love it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. On the other hand, the specs are never like 100% precise. That's my experience, because yeah. we had, while working on the DCK, we also had many challenges. Mm-hmm. Challenges are basically bug reports from implementations,
mm-hmm.
because obviously it's really complex and you mm-hmm. can't specify everything.
Mm-hmm.
It cannot be like 100%.
No, it's not. But if you compare now Java to, let's say, Go, Node.js, Python, Ruby, there is nothing even comparable to that, you know? I'm not talking about perfection. We are maybe, even if we are on 90%, we are orders of magnitude better than all the other platforms. So this is what's the interesting part, you know?
Yeah, and actually, maybe we will talk about it later, but last 2 years I spent implementing MCP.
Mm-hmm.
And the very first year, or almost 2 years, there was no such thing like TCK.
Mm-hmm.
Right now they have something called conformance mm-hmm. tests, but it's a very small test suite,
mm-hmm.
and it was really horrible, because mm-hmm. if there is no test compatibility suite, nothing like mm-hmm. that, you basically cannot claim that you are compatible, and it's most of the implementation just ignore many parts of the specs, and that's really horrible.
I know the Java and MicroProfile specs really well. And last year, I also implemented an MCP STDIO Java mm-hmm. SE from scratch. And I say, hey, cool, take a look at this spec. And I look at this spec, Model Context Protocol spec, mm-hmm. and I said, where is this spec? And then I tried to find it, and it was just more or less examples. And from the examples, I try, you know, to learn how it works. So back then, it was like more than 1 year ago as it came out. This is more like, you know, you could do this, you could, but they were, it is the quality of the model context protocol spec is absolutely not comparable to CDI or whatever. This is like, it is, I would say, worse than some, you know, tutorials what we have. Now it's better. Now it's getting better. But at the beginning, yeah, it was unbelievable. So why they call it spec? Maybe they call it, you know, like a tutorial how it could work or something like this, right?
Yeah, it gets better. And it seems that at the beginning, they didn't really know whether it will be like used like it is.
Exactly.
So they probably didn't have many resources working on that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and they also did stuff like adding a feature in one version of the spec, removing the feature in the next version.
Yeah, we will talk about this in one podcast explicitly. But alone the idea with the session ID, and this is only needed, you know, for specific features, because for the JSON RPC part, if you just, you know, get tools, it could be solved absolutely stateless way. And yeah, but I'm interested now in CDI, because so the CDI is a fascinating topic. So how you wrote these specs? So what I will do, I will write Java code first and see whether it works. And if it works, then write the spec. Or was your approach more, you know, to write the spec first, the paper, and then the implementation?
Yeah, so when we worked on some API, mm-hmm, then we tried to create some prototype first.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm, you know, a few, mm-hmm, interfaces, how would it work and so on. But then there are parts of the spec where no APIs involved. So in that case, we just wrote the spec immediately.
This is exactly my experience. Why I'm asking is because maybe you remember 10 and more years ago, UML was really popular. And we were supposed to draw circles and boxes, mm-hmm, first and then code. But what happened to me several times is if I started, you know, to code, I think differently. So I immediately got ideas. Oh, this is completely different, right? But in UML, I said, okay, this is good, this is good, this will work this way. If you start write a view lines in code, you're thinking completely differently. So this is why I'm always ask people who are involved in spec how they are actually working, because interesting. But okay, it's cool that you also go this way. Yeah.
Yeah, and we actually also had, because we were working on Weld, which is the reference implementation, mm-hmm, and we also tried a lot of stuff in Weld first,
mm-hmm,
and then basically contributed it back to the specification. So, mm-hmm, we had a few experimental APIs that we knew that one day, possibly, that they will go to the spec. So, mm-hmm, that was also another thing that we tried. Create experimental APIs, experimental features in the reference implementation,
mm-hmm,
and then contribute them back to the specification.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a normal thing to do, and it's the more robust way. This is similar to Ruby on Rails, right? It started with the product or project first, and then extracted this into a framework. If you start with the framework, it's always problematic because
yeah. On the other hand, you need to be prepared for the fact that it's not an easy task because you need to modify the API of your implementation,
mm-hmm,
then you have to deprecate it because you add the stuff to the specification APIs, and then you have this.
Mm-hmm.
In
code review, when I see deprecated, I always just deprecated. I create a defect and ask, you know, when it will disappear. Because if you say just deprecated, this is annoying because it will remain for all the time. And no one will use it. So right. So
exactly, deprecated should always contain two information.
Very good. Okay, cool. So
we should have when it was deprecated. That's also something that you don't want.
Oh, this is a good point.
Look at the history, right?
Yeah.
So when it was deprecated and when it will be eventually removed. That's, mm-hmm, these two. And also the third one, what to use instead, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Like so.
This when is a good insight. So two, I always demanded, or I wrote two, so when it will be removed, and the replacement. But when is even better, right? So when exactly. So to get an estimate, okay, why and no. Why would be also cool, but you can, this was too much, but yeah. What was your favorite CDI feature maybe? This is interesting.
Favorite feature. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say. I liked events. They're all kind of underused, maybe.
Events solve one problem. Transactional delivery. So what I misused or use events for is, imagine you would like to send an email, but only if the transaction succeeds. So you can send an event and then say on not committed, but
after success, I believe.
Something like this. So either before completion, so you know it will succeed, or after, so you have the choice. But you can actually send the email only if the transaction succeeds. Of course, email is not transactional, so you can only, suggest the sending, but whether it arrives, no one knows. But CDIs. And underused, in my projects, overused, because developers loved CDI and they wanted to solve everything with CDI, and then it's CDI events, and then it's just hard to track what happens. But for certain use cases, it's perfect. So for certain use cases, you can solve a lot of problems very easily, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Super cool. Are you involved in events?
Sure. So I'm basically at the time when I joined the spec, the regular events were finished already. But I tried to work or help with asynchronous events. Mm-hmm. Which was really difficult because the good thing, it's a good thing and bad thing that you have to keep backwards compatibility always. So the problem was that we have to create a separate API and it was not really easy. Also, the name is wrong because if you say synchronous, that would mean that the regular ones are always synchronous, which is not the case because you have these transactional observers. Mm-hmm. For example,
they are delayed, right?
Yeah, they are delayed. So it's.
I would say the transactionals are delayed but synchronous, But because if you block in the transactional events, it will block the transaction. So it is.
Yeah, but not from the point of where you fire the events.
Yeah.
Right. That's what I'm talking about. The piece of the code that says I'm firing an event, which is regular. Regular observer methods work the way that if you fire an event, then we basically synchronously call in a blocking manner all the observer methods, except for the transitional one. Anyway, I contributed to that as well. And also,
can you maybe briefly, explain the final state of asynchronous CDI events? So how they work? You remember still?
Yeah, I do remember. So basically, when you fire an event asynchronously, then by default, all the observer methods, they are asynchronous. We have special annotation for that, are executed on a separate thread or different thread. So when you call fire sync, the method immediately returns and you can continue doing stuff. Mm-hmm. And these asynchronous observers are executed on a different thread somewhere. That's the point. Mm-hmm. Because it kind of makes sense that if you say fire an event, most people would probably expect fire forget behavior, right? Mm-hmm. So like, this is the event and I don't care anymore. Mm-hmm. So for this kind of stuff, you should use asynchronous observers.
Exactly.
That's.
Mm-hmm. And was the thread pool configurable in the spec?
I believe that you could, I don't remember details, but you could provide your own executor so that you can use any thread pool that you wish.
And what's also interests me with CDI, there was an attempt to standardize the Java SE container. It was. So you could start. So is there any progress or the current state? Because I actually used it for fun, but it was not completely done somehow. So I think something didn't support the Java SE container, I remember. I have to look it up.
So this feature actually came from Valve because Valve has had the SE support for a long time. Mm-hmm. So we basically tried to use the Valve APIs and somehow standardize them. And it was used quite a lot, I think. I don't remember whether there was something incomplete.
Maybe, in the core profile of micro profile. So in one profile, strip that. So, and it's okay, why? So this is what I meant. So in one of the variations, it was removed. So I wondered why, because this is actually one of the cool features. When you stop working on CDI?
Never.
No. Oh, yeah. So you're still working?
I'm not contributing to the spec anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm not contributing to Weld anymore, except for like maybe sometimes reviewing some pull requests. Since I basically, when I started to work on Quarkus, since the first days, I don't remember, seven years ago, something like that.
Wow. And what was your task there?
Yeah, that I'm going to say.
Okay.
My first task was actually, because I came from CDI world, my first task was to create a prototype of build time dependency injection based on CDI, because we wanted the users to use the same APIs, mm-hmm. except for portable extensions, obviously, mm-hmm. and make it work in a build time oriented mm-hmm. stack. So that mm-hmm. was my first task in Quarkus, and I think that it worked really nice.
Yeah. It's Arc, right? So you've worked.
Yes, we call it Arc. Mm-hmm. And yeah. And we obviously still have some features or bugs in Arc, so I'm helping still.
What I found interesting, Specializes does not work on Quarkus recently.
Specializes is not supported. And exactly. To be honest, I kind of hate this annotation because when I was working on Weld, there were so many corner cases and problems and bugs and undefined behavior that we decided that it's not worth it. Like we don't add support.
What I wanted to do is what you can use alternative for it. In a test, I wanted to use a test implementation, safety production one. Mm-hmm. And this would be specializers would work perfectly because it would inject the specializers, right?
Yeah. The thing is that basically there is one big difference between alternatives and specializers is that alternatives basically only work for injection. So that if you inject a bean that has an alternative, you get the alternative instead. But specializes completely disables the specialized bean. Mm-hmm. So that's a big difference compared.
Which would work in my case because in source test, Java, if there is, it would be not in production, so it would be exactly. And alternatives is configurable in app properties. So you can, cool. And so you kept working on Arc?
Yeah.
And then?
Then I switched to many other extensions.
which one? I mean, interesting because... So
I work on the scheduler, which is about schedule methods and...
Scheduled,
Quartz integration as well. Vertex integration. We had something called reactive routes, which is not a thing anymore, which was like a declarative API for vertex routes. Qt, the templating library. Then we also have WebSocket Next implementation, which is, we decided to create, and we have two implementations currently. One of them is based on Undertow and on the specification. But we also decided to create a new API for Quarkus specific stuff. So there was WebSocket Next. What else? Many others.
Inspired by LLMs, right? Because to have a better chat support.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I also did something in testing. Yeah. That's
Why we need WebSocket Next? What was the why you couldn't go with Undertow?
Because of the API, we didn't like it. Actually, it was really. And we also wanted to add support for the reactive there, so that was not really possible with when you have an API that is coming from the spec, you cannot just throw have it working. I wanted to mention the testing story because that's interesting. We actually had this in Weld already. It was called Weld GUnit, and it was basically you could write a GUnit test and have the CDI container started so that you can test your beans like normally and use mocks for other stuff. So we somehow ported this to Quarkus as well.
Quarkus test?
It's called actually Quarkus component test. Quarkus test is the overall where you start the whole Quarkus application, but in Quarkus component test, you only start CDI and configuration, and then you can mock all the dependencies. So it's very fast, obviously, but some of the things are not working expected, for example, database layer and stuff like that. So you have to mock some of the parts of your application, but all the other stuff like injection and interception and events or whatever, that works. So
this was what, JUnit?
Yeah, JUnit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is
only
okay.
JUnit 5 mm-hmm. plus something. Yeah, I don't know what else.
Maybe, but schedule is also a key component. So schedule was huge because it was supported by EJB and there was no replacement by CDI. And Quarkus yeah. schedule solved the problem actually. And you designed the annotation the extension.
Yeah. We designed.
Well done, because what I liked at schedule that you use duration, so you could say no every 1 minute or whatever. So it was actually a cool annotation.
Yeah,
it's used a lot.
They actually also decided to have like a light variant where you only have in-memory scheduler, mm-hmm. and then we have Quartz integration, which is a little bit more heavier because you can use JDBC and store mm-hmm. your jobs and stuff. So you can choose which one to use.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And then you switch to MCP or was something between?
Many things in between, but I don't remember. No, there were also a lot of things in the core and stuff like that. So,
when you started to work on MCP?
Since the first version of the spec, basically. So it's not so a year and a half or something like that.
Yeah.
2 years, maybe, months. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And back then, it was actually guys from that are working on AI stuff. They asked me, hey, could you create a prototype for this little mm-hmm. thing? Mm-hmm. We don't know whether it will work or not. Just try it. So I tried a prototype. I implemented something, and it kind of works.
Mm-hmm.
We're still improving it a lot because obviously there are many things that could get improved.
Mm-hmm.
But it works, and I think that it's really the good thing was that I actually used most of the stuff that we already had. I mean, from other extensions that we, for example, I don't know how to invoke the business method of CDRB and how to collect the annotations and stuff like that. This is already solved in Quarkus.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically copied many other extensions and it's mm-hmm. it's fine.
I also started to implement immediately an MCP server, or not server, an MCP, I don't know how to call it. This is Java SE and only supports STDIO.
That's also a server, because STDIO is one of the transports, right?
So yeah, but it is like, yeah, it just starts in process, you know? It is like, it starts the main method, so there's not a server, you couldn't call it server. But the interesting intention is, why I did it, because I didn't trust it. Back then, the MCP server is available. And I say, okay, if the LLM calls me, I have the complete control with Java. And it worked surprisingly well, but I was surprised by the quality of the spec. But it worked. I used the examples as spec. This is what back then happened. And I had an interesting challenge because what I wanted to have, I wanted to have no dependencies and just Java SE.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I had the server, right, the MCP server. But the question is, how to fetch the tools, because I didn't want it, you know, to package the tools with the server. I wanted to keep them separate. Mm-hmm. This was a challenge, you know, how to separate the thing and without anything. So I could use annotations, but in Java SE, there are no annotations which are a search, you know, maybe something like named or something similar, nothing. There is no suitable annotation. And I started with a hack and it works surprisingly well. You know, the service loader, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there is a Java util function. And I use the function interface as an interface. So my tool can support function, which is loaded by service loader, and it works great. So my plugin mechanism is just create a tool with a jar, store it in a folder, and it works. So it's for my purposes perfect. So this is why. But you know, it's not comparable with Quarkus. It's not enterprise. It's just my personal stuff, and it works great. And I was curious whether it's possible to implement without any external dependencies. And then, of course, it's cool because I have complete control when the LLM would like to store a file. This is my code, so I can absolutely do whatever I like. So this is what I wanted to achieve. What I would like to do, I would to re-invite you back and talk about MCP in depth, because I have some experiences, you have some experiences, and there are some challenges. And how Quarkus can solve, how we can solve the problems and challenges. And so it will be in 1-2 weeks. And I would really love it to do this. And of course, also talk about CDA or whatever. So I'm curious also about that stuff. And where people can find you on social media, or give you feedback or follow your work. So whatever you have.
Yeah. So for the, let's start with the MCP server. That's a Quarkiverse project. So obviously you can file issues. You can see the code. You can read the docs in there.
Create pull requests even sometimes.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Propose it immediately. For Quarkus related stuff, then we have Quarkus repository that has open discussions. So Quarkus.
I think the name of the extension is Quarkus-MCP-server, right? And no, HTTP and whatever. This is
The name of the server.
The Maven coordinates of the Quarkiverse is like Quarkus MCP HTTP.
IO Quarkiverse. It's a Quarkiverse project. It's not part of the Quarkus core, so it's IO Quarkiverse MCP and then Quarkus MCP server. Mm-hmm. And we have like separate artifacts for different protocols. Transports. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have WebSocket. We have HTTP. We have Studio. Yeah, so for Quarkus-related stuff, obviously discussions and Zulip. We also have the Zulip for discussions. Mm-hmm. And other than that, I don't have many social medias except for Twitter. So that's
a LinkedIn, also.
A LinkedIn, yeah, but that's.
M Kauba on Twitter, right?
No. It's actually a different one. It's a very old one. It's at MA. RTUNEKK. It's different.
Okay, then I will put it in the show notes, of course.
Yeah, sure. So you can put me there. And yeah.
Yeah, thank you. So we covered a lot of ground for CDI. I always wanted to do this because you appeared everywhere in all, you know. Okay. Thank you a lot and see you next time.
Okay, thanks. See you.